Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
There are Last of Us 2 things a-brewing, people.
Yes!
So why not just talk about it as much as possible? I mean, we have done all morning, but the cameras are now rolling, and we'll continue to talk about all things relating to Naughty Dog's next game. Now, I have wrote down a whole bunch of different plot points, but everything is story-related. We'll also be delving into full spoilers for the original Last of Us, but as far as Last of Us 2 is concerned, everything is theory-based. So there's information out there, but we're, you know, take all of our comments and words and everything else as not officially confirmed. We can't possibly spoil the game because we don't know. But hope we'll see how close we get.
So we say. Anyway.
Yeah, we're going to come back to this in a year's time and be like, damn, we were so right.
Joel was a ghost all along. But yeah, so the opening thing I thought was very interesting because I've scoured all of the other journalists that got to go and check out the game. Mm-hmm. They got to play it for a couple of hours. And there's all sorts of hands-on reports out there from Kinda Funny to that one, the Easy Allies.
Easy Allies. Yeah.
I love Easy Allies. And all those guys. And they said at the very beginning of their presentation, Neil Druckmann came out and talked about what the game is like. And he said that the way that the game is being put together, he said it's a story that could only be done in video games. Ooh. So I wanted to open with that because they also talked about the game being or the themes being about cycles of violence and how that history can kind of repeat itself. And it seems, looking at the footage, that Ellie is kind of repeating the same thing that happened to Joel, mm-hmm. where you know, we have this sort of big thing at the beginning with in the trailer of the state of play thing. Looked like Dina dies, who is the girl that Ellie seems to be like forming a relationship with. Mm-hmm. And then if Dina dies, if that is the person who dies, then Sarah, then it's the same thing that happened with Sarah with Joel. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what do we think of that? The idea that the story can only be done in video games. What do you think he's referring to?
He mentioned something, it was in the interview, that he mentioned something about a story can only be done with video games, and then used the example of he couldn't tell us when we played as Ellie in the first game because that would have spoiled like an element of the game. So that was a sort of mechanic sort of thing that I read, at least anyway. Right. So I think he's referring to some sort of mechanic. It could be that you play as other characters as well as Ellie throughout the game, mm-hmm. as in the first one, but I feel that would be too on the nose from to use as an example. So yeah. I'm not entirely sure, but it's definitely a mechanic thing that he's talking about that's obviously film can't do, but I think it's active participation is probably
to be something active. I think that if he's talking about like the idea of like disconnections from, because we'd like video game violence is really, really fun, mm-hmm. hence Mortal Kombat or GTA or whatever, and I think if they're trying to do something that is like maturing the art form or maturing video games overall, then maybe they're going to put you in a role, because one of the biggest, most impactful scenes from the original is you see Joel kill the surgeons and save Ellie, and you can't do anything about it. The character makes a decision for you, and I quite like that in terms of Joel as agency in the story taking back control and getting his like quote-unquote daughter back kind of thing. But that forced you as the viewer to reconcile with violence in a way that you didn't have the hands-on-ness anymore. Like, you had to just watch it. So I'm assuming it's something like that.
I think that's like a great example. I think over the past couple of games, Naughty Dog as a studio have been kind of flirting with how to mar their stories with gameplay, because in the past it's always been good, they've been two core pillars, but it's very much been sort of gameplay section cutscene. Mm-hmm. I think with that moment in The Last of Us, you saw them really experiment well, because when it comes to that, part, you kind of expect a choice and they don't give you it. And that such makes that moment so much more impactful, I feel. And then I feel like you got that again with Uncharted 4 during the first couple of hours, which a lot of people thought were like slow, but it's to me that was kind of setting the scene of where Nathan Drake is now. You're kind of, you get used to that monotony of, oh, I haven't shot a dude in a while. This movie was like to live as an old Nathan Drake and I want him to
with
see
a mortgage.
With a mortgage and, you know, he does the dishes and he plays Crash Bandicoot. Oh my God, it's my life.
It's my life.
And I feel like they're going to push that even more in The Last of Us Part 2, but in a much more brutal way. I do feel they're going to... Well, Neil Druckmann said that the whole game's sort of about cycles of violence and how far you'd go to get justice or avenged, you know, a loved one that you've been wronged. And I feel like the only way to do that is to take someone that you love and then sort of see how far you go in the game yourself, because we go through so many video games just shooting people and not really thinking about the consequences of our actions. But I feel like The Last of Us 1, at the very end, you do finally feel the consequences of what you've done with like that lie. And the only way to sort of build on that in Part 2 is to put that directly in your hands again.
A small, just a really quick thing to throw in is that they've made it so that in Last of Us 2, the NPCs, the villains and stuff, all have names. Is that what you were going to say? And so, that, if you kill someone, like, they'll run over and, oh my God, he's killed Jeff! And, like, or if you kill one of the dogs, like, with all the, one of the other people will actually be, like, really upset that you killed their dog. And it's, like, they're trying to sort of ground it with things like that. But in terms of, like, you mentioned, like, the twist or the ending kind of thing, I love that they take control away from you. I think that it lands way better because you can't have, you can't choose. I don't know if it's the same with you guys, but if I'm ever making a choice in a game, I never really know what the best thing to do is. I'm like, do I do what? Like, do I do what I would do? Do I do what I think the character should do? I kind of fundamentally want to see both sides as someone who wants to see the whole game. And so for me, I always think there's more confidence in choosing for you and going, like, well, this is the way the story went, and live with the consequences. So I'm kind of game for them to do more stuff like that. And that's the same with like you guys kind of thing.
I like those moments in not just in The Last of Us, but sort of in L.A. Noir. You kind of, Cole Phelps in that game is sort of a character and you're just kind of embodying him for a bit. You don't have total control over him. He does things behind your back. He has an affair without you kind of knowing. And you're not privy to that.
What are you doing, man?
Exactly. I love that.
A good detective.
We get those moments where you're like, what are you doing? That's not what I would do. But that sort of, to me, is a testament to kind of good storytelling, because you care that much. And these characters are so well defined that you don't see them really as an extension of you. There is a connection between you two emotionally for sure, but it's not sort of a one-to-one kind of, you are my avatar for my thoughts and how I would react in that situation. It's no, this is what Joel would do, or in The Last of Us 2, no, this is what Ellie would do.
Plus, like, if you think about like Naughty Dog and Uncharted, like, for the longest time it was always like, you know, you play as Nathan Drake, you kill everybody, you snap necks, but you quip and everything's fine afterwards. And I remember like that's something that has taken like other players out of it, because it just doesn't make sense. But at the same time it was like, oh well, it's video game balance. It's not meant to be a reflection on the character. You're not meant to take it seriously. And I think the industry's kind of like or the medium sort of changed with that over time, where like we had ludonarrative dissonance in GTA 4. It's like, you know, you can go and butcher people in between missions, but then in the cutscenes, Nico is complaining about wanting to kill people. And it's like, that's a weird thing to tackle over time. And I think that maybe they want to try and do something with that, because Naughty Dog have a history of having a character like Drake who is associated with like swashbuckling adventures and high time stuff, but also a massive body count that they never really address. And Joel kills a lot of people in The Last of Us too.
There's a whole thing that I spoke about with this one though, where you can play as Ellie and not kill anyone at all. Like, you sneak through all the levels, which I think is a good way of approaching it. Like, if there's some sort of consequence for how many people you're killing and how many people you're engaging with in this cycle of violence, then surely that'd be a good way of approaching that sort of aspect of the narrative as well, where you have the choice to not kill anyone, to not murder any dogs.
Do you think they would do an ending kind of like The Witcher 3, where you don't realize that they've actually been monitoring you the entire time? And then it's only at the very end where it's like, well, actually, you spared XYZ people, therefore you get this ending, or Ellie turns out like this. I don't want that.
I don't think they'll do that at all. But I think maybe there'll be like a minor thing that kind of reflects that, or how people perceive you at the end or something like that. Like, I don't know. I think it could play into it, but I also think that that would take away from Naughty Dog's very special, this is how it plays out, deal with it sort of thing.
That's what I want them to do. I want them to have the confidence and be able to craft the game in such a way that we play it in, we all play it for the most part in a certain way, and they know that, and they then give you an ending that's like, oh my God, I didn't realize I was playing into this the whole time or whatever. Let's talk about Ellie and Dina, because they're one of the biggest sort of fan theories. The way that they cut the State of Play trailer is that the bit when Ellie gets pinned down by whatever that antagonistic force is, she looks up and she says like, please don't, or whatever, and we hear like a gunshot, I think. And we assume that Dina's the person who died, but what do you guys think of that? Do you think there's a potential that it's Joel that dies? We're going to get into full-on theory territory.
Well, this is where we might completely split, because I'm pretty certain that's not Dina, just because it's so heavily implied in that trailer, yet they refrain from showing it. And all the interviews with Neil Druckmann, he keeps dodging it. He keeps saying, look, I'm not going to confirm anyone's fate, but then it just sort of makes me question then, why are you going to heavily imply it if you're not going to say it? If that's not the case, I feel like, you know, it would be a great no, not great, but it would be motivation for Ellie if she lost Dina to sort of go on this hateful rampage. Mm-hmm. But with what Druckmann has said in the past, where he keeps saying that the theme of the game is hate and mm-hmm. how far both you and the characters will go to kind of get justice for your loved ones, the player at the moment doesn't already have that sort of connection with Dina. The character does, but we don't. And for me, it would be more kind of... more of a justification for us to seek revenge and see how far we'd be willing to go hurting these, you know, baddies in game if it was Joel, just because we've got that connection built in. If we lost him earlier on, I feel like it's more, not only does Ellie then have the justification to go off and go on this kind of, you know, vengeful journey across America, but we do as well. I feel like if we just jumped in with this and we saw Dina die, we could understand and sympathize with Ellie about her wanting to go down this dark path, but we might be kind of, you know, on the edge of that, because we don't have that built-in connection.
Yeah, it's weird, because like for me, I think that she would have a more visceral reaction to like what it's not. She doesn't have a fleeting romance with Dina, but it's building. And like she talks about in the original game with Joel, where she pushes him away and says like, "Everyone else has abandoned me except for you." Mm. And she also, we find out in the Left Behind thing, that she had the whole relationship or building relationship with Riley, and then that went sideways as well. So I think she'd be more annoyed about something that potentially started to get off the ground, only for it to be severed before it meant something.
Yeah.
Whereas like she knows what her relationship with Joel is, and potentially we'll get onto the whole theory that she knows that Joel's lying. There's a piece of dialogue at the beginning of the footage for The New Last of Us 2 that kind of hints that, you know, like her and Joel aren't getting on very well, and you could assume that it's because of the lie.
Teenagers,
in Apocalypse. But yeah, I think that like it's weird because the wider sort of framing of that scene is, again, according to the way that people have described the gameplay they got to play, is that Ellie and Dina go leave the camp. They leave the Jackson City kind of place, and they find this house. I forget what the name of the dude is that it belongs to, but they find out that one of the people that lived at the settlement has like this big old like weed and porn stash, and they like literally, and they're like, they break in and they like go in underground or whatever, and they like, you know, bust out the weed and the porn. For the most part, they just get high together and they're hanging out, and that seems very much like the same building that is in the bit where the people come in and pin Ellie down and shoot whoever's with her, who you have to assume is Dina. But actually, Ash, what do you think about the difference between Dina and Joel?
I think I totally agree that I think there's way more like investment in it being Joel, and I think that would play out better. But the thing is, we see the no don't and the gunshot and everything. Maybe someone's taken rather than like outright killed, because obviously she's got more friends than just Dina in this city. There's someone called Jesse who they mentioned a few couple of times being friends with, so maybe like he gets shot or like someone else gets shot, and then Dina is taken or Joel is taken, you know what I mean? And then there's this whole, I know there's this whole theory we're going to get into about Joel like being around but not being around,
being Ellie's head.
But yeah, I don't know, I think there's a lot more to be said for someone being driven to go through all these camps and to deliver all of this unrelenting vigilante justice if they're after something at the end of it rather than just for vengeance. And I know that the whole thing is cycles of violence and hate and everything, but I think that she's got to be searching for something to drive her this far and this hard, considering everything she's been through. She could very easily just kind of like be like, okay, yeah, that's that. I'd be like Joel and be grizzled and that'd be that.
Yeah. I personally way prefer that as opposed to just mirroring the first game, because you'd have the exact same lead up, and it's like, why invest so much time into Ellie and Dina if you're just going to kill Dina off and make her a plot point? Like you said, it makes more sense to have something to work towards, and then you have the scene where Joel comes back anyway to get her back together.
I just think her searching for Dina, it mirrors the first one where it's kind of like, it's like a hopeless situation and everything, but I don't know, I just think that I think it gives a bit more to it of a pushing forward and you being invested as well and going, right, well, I'm going to complete this mission sort of thing.
Let me give you some more narrative stuff. I think this is like full on theory territory, but so there's like three sort of main factions in the game. The two of them that we found out about so far are the Seraphites and the Washington Liberation Front. The Seraphites are the ones that hang out near Jackson, like where the end of the first game sort of ends up in Tommy's encampment and everything. I think the people that are in the room that pin Ellie down and kill whoever that is, I think they're the Fireflies. The thing is, the name the Seraphites, if you googled what seraph means, and apparently it's Hebrew for fiery one or burning, and there's that whole bit in the initial footage where some of the Seraphites pin this person down and say clip her wings and they shoot someone, and the person that they're going after is an ex-member with like one of the scars on her face. So I think the Seraphites are like a faction of ex-Fireflies that have like turned to like all-out violence or whatever, and I think that they're after Ellie and Joel because of what happened at the end of the first game. So I think it would make sense sense if you had them bust into the house and they kill or kidnap Dina or whatever. They leave Ellie alive, but the situation that leaves Ellie in is that she then faces the repercussions for something that she had nothing to do with in the first place. Mm. It was Joel that killed all the Fireflies.
Yeah.
That then pits Ellie up against Joel as well.
Yeah, I think that's connects to this wacky theory that I've got, Scott, because I feel like...
You bust out your wacky theory now?
Obviously got my theory now.
Okay, you've got a wacky theory card. You play it whenever you want.
It's been slotted into the schedule.
It's not that wacky, but I want to know if you guys agree with it, because it links to what you just said there. Obviously, they're going to have to deal with the fallout of what Joel did at the Firefly base at the end of the first game. Mm-hmm. I don't think the entire game is going to be, you know, them trying to get revenge, but I do feel like one of the plot points, especially early on, mm-hmm. will be that there is this, you know, that was a massive deal. Like, he massacred loads and loads of people, and people, you know, don't know the full facts about it, but I think something will trickle out about, you know, an immune girl being with like an older man and getting like a lot of people killed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Ellie is wearing the mask earlier in the game, because obviously she's hiding her immunity. She doesn't need that mask, mm-hmm. but I feel like not only is she doing it just to, you know, get people off her back for being like, whoa, you're the chosen one, but because, you know, there will be some consequences if someone finds out that she's the immune mm-hmm. girl that ended up, you know, leading to all of this violence and death at the mm-hmm. Firefly Bliss. Mm-hmm. I think that will indirectly get either Dina or potentially Joel killed, and then she'll have to live with those consequences of a choice she didn't make, but she was a part of it, and that's going to haunt her as much as any sort of, you know, death, and make that death even more substantial.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because if you go back, I literally had to look at the Last of Us script and comb it line by line. Because if you think about people who know about Ellie's immunity, Tommy knows, Marlene knows, and Tommy's old wife or girlfriend used to work with Marlene as part of the Fireflies. So if that somehow got back, that, like, you know, Tommy talks to someone who used to know in the Fireflies, all that stuff would trickle back through, and then it would come out that Ellie's the girl, you know, that's immune, kind of thing.
I don't think he'd give her up or anything, though.
Not intentionally.
No, I think he's smarter than that. I think it's Joel's brother. He's got like a bit about him. So I don't think he's going to be a cause for it. But I think that, I don't know, his settlement's got something to do with it, because there's no reason why they'd all be going to Tommy's settlement if that was going to have like a problem with it in gameplay wise.
What do you guys think in terms of, because we talk about like Joel's role, like he's obviously not around at the beginning of the game. Well, that's the thing. This is when you bring in some of the dialogue that characters say based on descriptions of the gameplay that's out there. There's one bit where Ellie and Dina are apparently on their horses going to explore and everything. And Dina asks Ellie, what are you guys going to get up to at the weekend or something? And she's like, oh, I'm going to watch a movie with Joel. And then Dina says, is everything okay between you two now? And so, like, that's all you get. But, like, that's the thing. It's like, does that mean that she's found out about the secret? Like, what would be the thing that would make them frosty, other than just maybe Joel's not okay to live with?
I've got to say, they could just be having normal issues of living, like, together.
No, it's the secret, Ash.
Joel's a bit grumpy. Ellie's got a load of hatred in her. Like, they're going to have some clashing to go
I think he'll be super protective parent. Like, maybe archetypal one-dimensional style. But I think Naughty Dog are better scriptwriters than that. But I think if you're going to write the extension of the emotional reaction that Joel has at the end of the first game, it would be, I'm going to suffocate you with love kind of thing until, you know, something kind of can't be taken anymore.
Well, one of the most negative sort of outcomes of that final choice at the end of the first game is the fact that Joel's kind of taken agency away from it. He's decided what's best for her in that situation. He's lied to her, and Ellie might have accepted the lie. We don't know. That's still kind of left ambiguous, but like, the idea is that even though it might be born out of, you know, love or whatever, it's still very kind of, it's a selfish love.
Yeah.
He's made all the decisions for her in his head. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's a good thing. He's looking out for her. He doesn't want her to sacrifice. He wants her to sort of live a life, but it's still a twisted thing to do, you know? I feel like that would lead to him becoming, you know, overbearing or, you know, suffocating her with love, like you said, in a kind of toxic way.
So it's like, there's another way to read it. I mean, Neil Druckmann did a whole speech about another way to read the ending, which is what they were kind of going for, that the end of the first Last of Us is more of a feminist message, that the way that Ellie looks at Joel is that she knows that he's lying, and it's the first time that she realizes she doesn't need him, that she could actually be totally fine without him, and she can be independent without him. So, like, there is that whole side of it where, like, that's another thing that he's taken away from her, because he's reduced her to being like a daughter figure, being a weaker figure again.
I think this is all fantastic and wonderful to think about in theory, but realistically, are they going to drop that Ellie knows about Joel's secret in trailers and gameplay?
Yeah.
Is that going to be fed
but
back?
I think so, because that's so obvious that you'd open the game with that.
I don't think so. I don't know, because she either knows at the beginning, or she's going to know at a climactic point in the game. So it's either, like, it could be one or the other, but I feel like having that little taster is just going to be, they've had an argument earlier in the week.
Maybe. Yeah. It's weird, because, like, there are whole swaths of the fandom that think that the way her face is at the end of the game means that she knows. And, like, I can totally kind of see that. For me, I would get it out the way, quote unquote, at the very beginning. Have it be the crux of why they argued. And you get that, because then you can do way more with the script after it. And you're not building up to a predictive plot point.
You know what? For me, I'd... I think it's going to go down a different route. Again, completely conjecture. But
you're playing your wacky theory card again.
I'm playing the wacky theory card
again.
Oh,
there it is.
The way I view the ending of The Last of Us, and this is the beauty of it, because we have different interpretations of it, is that I do think Ellie's kind of accepting of the lie, or she kind of knows what's happening, but I think it's going to be sort of an unspoken thing between the two. I don't think they would ever, ever talk about it.
Right.
And I don't think they talk about it at the beginning of the game. I feel like it's going to come midway through where Ellie's just kind of like, yeah, I know, what you did was wrong and it was terrible, but we've just never talked about it in this entire relationship. Is kind of being built off that line. We both just kind of accepted it without ever having to acknowledge it or wrangle
need
the
each
consequences.
Other emotionally, maybe, yeah.
But I feel like there will be something that forces them to wrangle with it now after so long away.
There's a whole theory that obviously like Joel isn't actually around that sort of thing.
We can get to that in time.
I know, I'm just, maybe they never actually have the chance to talk about it is what I'm saying. Maybe like she knows, but he never says it. And then if he's gone, then they can never actually talk about it. And that's her coming to deal with that sort of thing afterwards. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think they do it at the beginning.
He could totally do a Han Solo and bury himself in work and scavenging or whatever. There's a 5-year gap between 1 and 2. So there's enough time for Jackson itself to build up and flesh out kind of thing. But the fact that he's not there at the beginning kind of, you know, assumes that he's off on some other mission or whatever, because it's Tommy that comes to console her after the whole thing with whatever character dies underground kind of thing. But yeah, just as like the final part with Joel, like, I guess, what do you guys want to see? Because like for me, in terms of narrative roles, thematics and stuff, Joel's mostly served his purpose. Like, you know, like if you bring him back, then you bring him back as an extrapolation of that lie, and how far does he go to hide the lie? But switching gameplay to playing as Ellie, that changes the whole meaning or role of Joel altogether.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I don't know, because there's a whole like devil on your shoulder sort of aspect of it as well. If they're talking about cycles of violence again, because they always talk about cycle of violence, that's the thing that keeps coming back and back and back. Mm-hmm. If you have him there as like this like malevolent force, like he's been like because he has done everything that he's done in the previous game and made these decisions that do sway him as like a bad for the sake of humanity, he's a bad person.
Yeah, I mean he's one of the most divisive characters for the most part, a big villain.
Exactly, like he's a human emotional character. Yeah, no, I love Joel. I think he's fantastic, but he's technically like a bad person.
Yeah.
Having him there as this like violent force on Ellie that's like pushing her to do these things and her having to move away from him and push him away, I think that's a good sort of way that they can explore that sort of narrative. But
yeah, I feel like, you know, as much as I love Ellie and Joel and do deep down want them to live happily ever after together, I just don't think what's happened in the first game can kind of allow for that.
Right.
I feel like when it comes to Joel, even though he's done everything for Ellie in his mind, like I said, for, you know, it's all good intentions, but the road to hell is paved with good intentions and stuff. I feel like she's kind of got to cut that part of her out, whether that's because he dies earlier on or whatever. I just feel like for her to live like in her fullest. She's got to kind of get rid of them.
Yeah.
Because that relationship is so strained. And we've seen it with sort of Joel and Tommy before. Like, this sort of relationship is mirrored when they were doing bad things, when Joel was doing bad things. It was all justified because, you know, he was looking out for Tommy.
He kept you alive.
He kept him alive, and he didn't understand the psychological toll and physical toll that put on his brother. And I feel like the same thing is kind of happening with Ellie when it comes to this lie. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big sort of weight to put on her. And if she knows or not, she's going to find out eventually. And I don't think he sort of sees that. He does a lot of good things for good reasons.
Yeah.
And he doesn't realize the consequences of that.
Joel's a bit of a mess in like a really human endearing kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that bit in the reveal trailer where like she turns around and her reaction isn't jubilation or anything. It's what are you doing here or something like that.
Yeah.
And I know the fans obviously like leapt on the whole, like there's a staircase in the shot with Joel that there isn't in the Ellie one, and the hand looks too young to be Joel. But I guess we might as well talk about the whole, you know, Joel is inside Ellie's mind thing. Where do you guys initially come down on that? And I'll tell you a big theory.
I think it's a really interesting way of them playing it out. And I think the whole him saying that gaming does things that no other medium can sort of thing. I think having Joel there as an influence, as like an invisible influence that you can then communicate with and then go on your own way, I think that'd be a really interesting, very good way of playing that out. And I think Naughty Dog are the best people who would handle that as well. So I'd kind of like to see the whole Joel's not really there thing, but that it's been seeded so much that we can theorize about it now feels like it'd be too obvious.
Yeah, true.
I feel like originally when the first trailer dropped, like 3 years ago or whatever, I was pretty convinced that, you know, he's dead, he's a ghost. Now I've sort of changed my mind on that because Neil Druckmann keeps saying, you know, he's a big part of it. We've seen him in the actual game. My theory at the moment is that he's not making it past the first act. I feel like he's going to be the inciting incident that makes Ellie go on this journey, and then he can still be a big part of the game, but in his absence rather than him being that. I feel like not having him around for a good chunk of it will sort of affect both the players', you know, conceptions of who Ellie is and who they are without having that sort of partner to bounce off with. I feel like, for me, that I would like to see that happen.
Well, it seems like what they've shown us is in order, where, like, you know, the second half of the game, when whatever the incident is that sets Ellie on her big revenge kick, that bit when she's back in Seattle and she's taking on the wolves, that whole thing, if the sequences are in order, then he turns up after she's killed, like, a good 20, 30 people. And he says, you know, you didn't think I'd let you do this alone or something like that. And it is that thing where, like, if Joel goes AWOL at the beginning, then that's him returning to the story X number of years later. So it's like, well, you're going to get both, ostensibly. You'd get to see what is Ellie like, just unrestrained and away from Joel, but then what's the value of Joel if the ending of the first one was that she can be completely independent without him? Like, does he actually have any purpose in the end anyway? I guess it would be just like an extrapolation of fatherhood. In terms of crazy theories though, I initially I was gonna tweet all this out. I had like a 4-page tweet. I was gonna do a thing. I was like, I figured it out, guys, it's definitely a thing.
Come on.
No, this doesn't actually fully line up, but I'll just explain it to you anyway and I'll tell you why it doesn't make sense. But I mean, the whole thing
the whole
Joel's a ghost doesn't make sense, and I think it would be fun enough, but I think it would be too obvious at this point. So the theory I had was that at the very beginning of the original chunk of footage, Joel comes to the doorway and says, like, you're not going to go through with this or something like that, are you? And then Ellie's playing the guitar. In the Ellie's edition of Last of Us 2, the collectible one, the collector's edition, the figure of Ellie, she's not sitting on a bed, she's sitting on a slab of concrete. She's covered in blood, and she's like with a guitar and everything. And in my mind, in full-on fan theory territory, I was like, what if she's grabbed her guitar and she's sitting playing it after she's accomplished everything that she was going to do, you know, in this new game or whatever? Another proviso being that Joel is the person that dies at the start, and she's sitting there on this slab of concrete just playing a guitar, same song because it's all like, you know, sad and everything, and she's remembering back to the very beginning of where it all began when she committed to the full revenge kick, and that was back in the bedroom, which would be the same framing, the same location as the original trailer, and that's why Joel would be a ghost in that scene, because he'd be at the doorway. That's why he doesn't come in, because it's always in her mind, which also lines up, if you wanted to, with the footage that we got from State of Play, because he's in like a slightly different location, and when she turns around, whatever, like, you know, you can do all that stuff. So for me, I was like, ghost Joel, and Ellie's sitting on the concrete, and she wasn't sitting on the concrete when she was playing the guitar before, so one of those scenes has to be in her mind. So I thought, yeah, if she flashes back in her mind to when all of this stuff began, when she committed to this tale of revenge, that was in her bedroom when she was sitting there, and if only Joel had came in, and maybe that could have reasoned with her, and it could have all gone a different way. That was what I was going to go
I like
with.
That.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense, though, because once I started crunching it, if you look at the location where she's sitting, she's in a different place on the new footage when she's sitting at the it looks like she's at the edge of a bed, but it's more like a couch or something. Mm. And so it doesn't line up with the scene that I thought it did from the original footage. So that's not going to be the case. But I liked it.
What a roller coaster ride!
But
that
that's
was.
The thing, considering the amount cooler. Of people. Thank you. The amount of people that have gone through with Joel as a ghost and obviously and whatever. I was like, well, I'm going to put some time into it and actually try and figure it out. That's the closest I can get to Joel being a ghost. And they, even then, that's taken the assumption that the Ellie figure is representative of a scene from the game and not just her on a piece of concrete.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, this is the beauty of it. This is what I've been loving, you know, talking about the trailers for because they are so purposefully vague. Neil Druckmann refuses to confirm anything. The trailers, as we've just mentioned, are cut in a way that leaves things suggested. We don't really know what the plot is. We still have no idea who that mystery woman is from trailer 2.
That's my next point, Josh.
For God's sake. But I love that we can pick it apart. There are a lot of people on the internet when me and Rach did a video the other day and I kind of bust out this theory that I thought Joel was going to die. Got very, very angry. Look, I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen. I think people are sick of it. But also, you know, the fact that we all have these different interpretations is very cool. Mm. I like that none of them are sort of, you know, set in stone at the moment. Anything could happen come February. All of them could be wrong, right? Mm. Every single
I hope
one of them
so.
Could be wrong.
I don't know. I think that there's got to be something said for this game about being about letting go, because the first game wasn't about letting go at all. It was about holding on and
very
fighting
true.
Back and clawing through and doing everything you can to stay together and that be your future together. Whereas this game's got to be about accepting death and accepting moving on and acceptance in general. So whether it's Ellie has Dina gets taken away and she has to run after her and try and protect her, and at the end she's going to die and she has to accept that and be like, okay, that's that. And Joel helps her along the way because he's like, yeah, let's do some killing. That's what he likes doing. That, it could be that. It could be her trying to process Joel as a memory, as a spirit, and then coming to terms with his actual death and being like, okay, I can let all this life go. I think there's got to be a moment of clarity and a moment of, okay, that's enough of that now.
See, that would tie back in with the idea that Dina is kidnapped instead, because then they would actually get their ending and you'd have something to go back to, as opposed to just everything is done, Dina's dead, Joel's dead, all the other factions are gone or whatever, and then Ellie has to try and reset again, and then we get a part three at some point in the future. I would assume something more final, depending on if they're going to do another one or not. So yeah, you mentioned the mystery woman. There's a theory with her, which is nigh unconfirmed at this point, because so the whole thing a couple of years ago, the Naughty Dog Twitter announced that Laura Bailey had been cast in The Last of Us 2, and it was like Laura Bailey cast as, and it was four characters, four like potential characters. What the hell's another word for? Because characters can be an individual. I mean, like a word is made up of like six characters. Like, you know
letters?
What I mean? Letters is a
there
word.
Letters,
that's a word
letters.
I need. It's almost half three.
We smart eight. Half three,
SMRT. And she got cast as this, four character word. Ellie's mum is called Anna.
Four character or four letter?
Four character word, Ash Milford. It's an SMRT word. And she got cast as this person called Anna. Now, Ellie's mum is called Anna. Mm-hmm. Marlene mentions her being called Anna in one of the recordings that you can find when you're in the Firefly base at the end of the first game. So that kind of, like, reframes that initial trailer that we got with the Seraphites and the Clipper wings and all that sort of stuff, and that big muscly woman with the big hammer. Assumedly that is Ellie's mum, but that would mean that scene is in the past. Either that scene's in the past and Marlene was telling the truth, because the audio diary that she leaves talks about Anna in the past and says, I really miss you, I wish you were here and stuff like that. Or, because there's no specifics as to how she died, she's always been alive and she's out there fighting the Seraphites and the offshoot faction of the Fireflies, and because she was a Firefly, that's why she's up against them so much.
Well, right, this is where all my theories kind of like come crashing down, because I have no idea how these two different parts of the game connect. But I do have one idea, and
it
is that, you know, Ellie's mom is still dead. But I feel like she's going to be another sort of example of why this cycle of violence, we're back to that phrase again, just doesn't work. Because she looks out for blood at the end of that second trailer, if you go back. She just watched a bunch of people get slaughtered. She's absolutely ripped and she's fuming. She's going to kill some fools. But I just don't feel like that ends well. Like, we know Ellie's mom is, you know, at the moment she's dead. And I feel like at some point Ellie's gonna have to realize what happened to her in, like, Joel or whatever, like all of these people before her, just realize that you know, perpetuating this cycle of violence and killing to get revenge and
to
justice
get the emotion
and what's
out.
Yours to get the emotion out just doesn't work and only leads to even more bloodletting and more consequences. And I'm sure that'll tie in with the Fireflies as well. You know, killing all those Fireflies is going to have some devastating consequences at some point. And it's just, I feel like this is going to be another part of the game that gets it into Ellie's head that, you know, what she's doing might work in the short term, might feel good, might get revenge or whatever, but it's not something you can build something sustainable off.
True, and also on the mum front, Ellie carries around a note from her mum in her bag. I forget the exact text of what it says, but it is talking about, like, I wish I could have met you, and I believe that you'll become like this. I think it says something, like, I believe you'll become the strong woman that I always knew you could be, or something like that. And it's like, obviously there's a big part of Ellie that's like quite subtly invested in her mum, like in her mum's wishes to do well and not give in to, like, you know, some of, because she has a lot, Ellie has a lot of sort of rage in her from being sort of handed off to different groups and, you know, oh, you're immune to whatever, so we're going to use you for this experiment and whatever. But she never really seems to fully give in to that, especially when she's hanging out with Dina. She's very much just a regular teenager. Like, it's only when, like, obviously whatever it is goes south that she gives in to this fully sort of, you know, like a rage-fueled persona kind of thing.
We only know from what we've seen. She could be like putting out cigarettes on people like while she's walking around.
Maybe it was a full-on Terminator. Yeah. What do you think of the mystery woman, and where would you like her to be in the timeline?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think her being Ellie's mom would be really interesting. I think there's another thing to be said about more ghosts hanging around, like having a job on the other side, like, whoa, what's going on? Let's have a dream sequence now.
I think
it'd be really interesting to see her come back as this other force in her life after having Joel for so long and that influence, and then seeing her mom meeting her and seeing how she's grown up and that sort of thing would be very satisfying. But I think bringing her back from the dead is a bit of an ass-pull move when it comes to what they've set up.
Yeah, it's weird because I am so game for a conversation between her and Joel as to, like, parenthood and the role of a parent when someone is independent or grown up or mature enough to go out on their own. Do they even need parents at that point? And whatever, all those sort of things that emerge from, you know, conversations over time, different generational divides and everything. I think there's more they can do with that than just showing you what life was like before Joel and Ellie were even a thing.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just missing something.
I feel like you can still comment on that without, you know, having the characters have an actual conversation about it. Because at this point, Ellie has had, what, three kind of parent figures, and they've all, as far as we know, been kind of crap, with the exception of Ellie's mum. Like, she was with Marlene for a long time, who eventually would have sacrificed her for the betterment of the world. Then she's had Joel, who killed a lot of people in the light, where we don't know what her relationship was like with her mum. So we don't know if that was the same, and that's something that, you know, again, wants her to break out of these old guard mentalities of how you should be living in the post-apocalypse and that this is the only way, or whether she was, you know, someone better, someone more open, someone she can actually, you know, properly look up to, rather than just someone where this kind of weird problematic love is there and that's getting her through.
Because I don't know if I could be just missing something that's mentioned in one of the audio recordings, but I don't know if Anna knows that Ellie is alive and that Ellie is out there somewhere, and, like, how much Anna just knows that she had a daughter and she was taken away from her, and, like, whatever, that could easily fuel that whole transformation of her body to become this, like, you know, more survivable sort of persona. She's really, obviously really big. She can handle herself. She's the one who saves the day in that scene. Whether she's fighting to discover Ellie as much as Ellie, like, you know, I mean, Ellie doesn't know about her mum at this point, but, like, you know, they could easily be set on a path where they need to discover each other, which eliminates the need for Joel.
It would be really nice to see the whole fatherhood to motherhood shift as well in the series, going from those two. I think that'd be a really good way of exploring it. But
because another one of the fan theories was just that you know, Ellie's sort of role as this girl who's immune, like, that comes out, whether it's through Tommy or the Fireflies or anybody, if that word kind of gets out there, then if Anna does know that Ellie was the, like, maybe she's immune as well or whatever, and she gets word of that, and that scene where we see her with the hammer is her fighting her way back across the country to get back to Ellie, and it could be back in the present. I guess it just depends, like, where that scene would be best served. Like, for me, I'm not that bothered about it being a prequel. I'd rather, or beforehand, I would rather it was a clash. I want to see the conversations between Joel and whoever that woman is.
Yeah. Do you think Will Play as this mystery woman who is almost definitely
Ellie's
mom?
On the front of the vinyl soundtrack as well. Like, I think she's a big deal.
I think you've got to play as her. I think it's going to happen at some point. Whether it's in the past, whether it's in the present, I think at some point we play as her.
I hope so. She looks a lot like Ellie. I mean, for a time, I was like, oh, maybe that's like Ellie in the future, but she hasn't got the tattoo, so it kind of can't be. We might as well end on another sort of just general fan theory thing, which is just something that my wife threw in, which is just that, what if that woman is Joel's ex-wife? Because there's very little mentioned about Joel. This is pure fan theory. Very little is mentioned about Joel's ex-wife. He only, I think that he references her at the very beginning of the first game. And they were together in, like, the 90s, and that was it. Makes a whole lot of sense. But if you're just going to throw in what could this character be and why are they important, maybe
I'm going to tell you something I don't like in post-apocalyptic fiction right here. This is why I don't want it to be Ellie's mom being alive as well. I don't like it when it comes to sort of zombie stories that are set in the future after the world is ravished. Mm-hmm. when two people are just very lucky enough to come back into contact with each other when everyone else is dead. For some reason, that always rubs me the wrong way, and that's just a personal opinion.
I think it depends how it's done, but I don't know what you mean.
I don't like it, I don't think. Which is why I want Ellie's mum to be dead if she does come back.
Oh, okay.
Well,
see,
come back.
Oh, see, I want Ellie's mum to be alive. I want this woman to be Ellie's mum in the present. I want her to get involved in the whole scenario and whatever. But yeah, the ex-wife thing, I think that was like, that's interesting in terms of like Joel finding another end for him. No?
I don't know. Joel's like his lone wolf thing, isn't he? Like, Ellie was the only one who ever
got... Not by choice, though.
It is, because Ellie was the only one who ever got through to him, really. Mm. Like, after Sarah going, Ellie was the one that was there for him. And, like, with this whole thing that he's had with Ellie, it's just all been a bit much for him, hasn't it? I don't know. I think he had that partner at the beginning of the game, which she was great. And obviously, if he gets... If he gets... someone like that again, that could be a really good dynamic, but I don't know.
Oh, see, the Tess and Joel dynamic, I always think of like Joel's mostly subservient to her, or he falls into like, because she's like a gang leader or whatever.
She's great.
She's like really strong, but like in terms of like, he loses Sarah and I feel like he rebounds back into like this strong sort of, oh, well, I can, you know, because he's like a courier or something before him. And he's like, well, I have this like set of skills where I can, I guess I can put them to use, and years go by and he's like obviously seen so much stuff, but I wonder if they round out more of his character by saying, well, actually he has another chance at a family if he has someone else.
No. I don't like it.
Joel, happy ending.
I just don't think it's him. I think that we're in for a real tragic time with this, and I think him finding another lady to settle down with, or an old flame to settle down with, just kind of betrays the emotional impact of this story. And if they try and pivot again emotional impact off killing someone that's really close to Joel that he's finally opened up to, I think it's cliche.
It's true. I'm trying to think of things they can do with Joel that isn't killing him, because that seems like the most predictable thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think that they would do it well, but everyone's assuming that Joel's going to die. Mm. And so I'm wondering, how do you tie that character off? What are his final scenes if they're not death scene?
He just goes and lives out in the woods in a cabin.
You know what? He does like the Thanos thing, because he's Thanos now. He goes and lives in a cabin on his own. You know, job's done. Ellie's happy, probably. A man might be back, I don't know, but he's got to live out the remainder of his life. You know,
he's made
peace with himself. Mm. So that's the most important thing. You know,
it's true.
Come to terms with his past. He's come to terms with Sarah. He's come to terms with how much he's lost. And now he can just be fine in himself.
He goes back to the room with the porn and the weed, right? And
then, you know,
and then he settles the hell down.
Maybe he just has a blood transfusion from Ellie, makes himself immune, and then goes and sacrifices himself and everyone can take it from him.
No, this is what happens at the end of The Last of Us 2. Joel grabs the weed, grabs the pawn, goes back to Bill's, is like, oi, Bill, let's set up those traps and just have a good time. Smoke the weed, play the FIFA, my friends.
Oh, good. After the most solid discussion on fan theories, we end on Joel getting high with Bill. Why not? But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're following along on the video side of things, or come find us on social media if you're listening on the audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Goodbye.
And Josh Brown.
Bye.
I'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Joel's dead.
He's alive.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.